This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
The star of today's Radio EcoShock show is the American climate. After 8 years of denial and foot-dragging by an oil-based administration, U.S. scientists can finally announce climate change is here, it is happening now, and your city and country will suffer worse climate disruption as long as we continue to dump greenhouse gases into the tender atmosphere. Those are the facts. I'm Alex Smith with a full lineup of audio you need to hear. We'll start with the most important press conference of 2009, the release of the multi-agency report Global Climate Change Impacts in the United States. It's the list of violent storm warnings, heat wave predictions, cities and parts of whole states either going underwater or roasting without water. Everyone will know the climate is badly out of balance. You'll hear a short introduction by Dr. Jane Lubachenko, Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere and the NOAA Administrator. From the same White House press conference, you'll also hear a description of impacts from Dr. Thomas Carl, Director of the National Climatic Data Center for NOAA. Then we'll go to a post-conference interview with Joe Rahm, the author of Hell and High Water, a former Clinton energy appointee and simply the best climate blogger on the net with his climateprogress.org. We'll ask Joe what it all means for the country and for the average person. Global climate change impacts in the United States. Here is NOAA Administrator Jane Lubachenko at the White House press conference, June 16, 2009.
First and foremost, human-induced climate change is a reality. Not only in remote polar regions and in small tropical islands, but every place around the country, in our own backyards. Climate change is happening. It's happening now. It's not just a problem for the future. We're beginning to see its impacts in our daily lives. More than that, humans are responsible for the changes that we are seeing, and our actions now will determine the extent of future change and the severity of the impacts. So another major conclusion of the report is that it's not too late to act. Decisions made now will determine whether we get big changes or small ones. Substantially cutting heat-trapping pollution will result in less climate change and smaller impacts. Earlier cuts in emission would have a greater effect than cuts later. This is very powerful information, and it's documented in the report with substantive information about specifics and regionalized to the country. This report looks at how climate change is already changing and how it's already beginning to affect our lives. It also examines projections of future climate change and the impacts on every region of the country and many different aspects of our lives. We're also reporting today with greater confidence than ever before that human activities are the main cause of the changes that we see underway. Today, we're going to show you a sampling of the kinds of climate changes and resulting impacts from selected regions around the country, and obviously the full report has greater richness and more examples. Next one, please. This report provides timely information to inform decision-making. This information is needed now around the country as we move into an era of increased awareness about the realities of climate change and begin to take climate change into account in making decisions. This is true for planning for power plants, coastal development, water resources, building codes, insurance plans, etc. And the kind of decisions that this report is intended to inform are made certainly by members of local, state, and federal government, but also by business people, farmers, engineers, and others. All of those individuals need to have access to the most current and reliable information which this report provides. Throughout the report, we looked at the differences in impacts between lower emissions and higher emissions. While the higher emissions scenarios are a continuation of recent trends, it's critically important to recognize that trends are not destiny. if we take immediate and sustained action to reduce heat-trapping pollution, we can, in fact, avoid the most severe impacts that we will be discussing today. So this report gives Americans information that they need to better understand the consequences of decisions about both reducing the emissions as well as adapting to a climate-changed world.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock, syndicated activism, on the net at ecoshock.org. That was the new American Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere and the NOAA Administrator, Jane Lubachenko. We now go to Dr. Thomas Carl, the director of the National Climatic Data Center, speaking at the White House press conference, releasing a new scientific report on the impact of global climate change and what it means to America.
It's now my pleasure to introduce one of the lead authors of the report, my colleague and NOAA scientist, Tom Carl, who will talk about the science and the key findings of the report.
As Dr. Lubchenko has noted, a key finding of this report is that climate change is happening now. We've already observed changes in many aspects of the climate, and we've documented these changes, and I just want to identify a few of the important changes we've seen. U.S. average temperature has risen by 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit over the last 50 years. We've had more rain coming in heavy downpours that can lead to flooding. Less winter precipitation is falling as snow, more as rain, so there's less snowpack in the mountains, and it melts earlier in the spring. These changes alter the amounts and timing of river flows, making less water available in the summer. Last, but certainly not least, sea level has risen along U.S. coastlines. Some places are seeing much greater rise than others, and similar regional differences are expected in the future. And there's other changes we've observed. For example, glaciers in the Mountain West are melting. Permafrost is thawing. Glaciers in Alaska are also melting. Not only have these changes been observed and documented in the U.S., every one of them has been shown to be linked to human activities, namely the increase in heat-trapping gases caused by the burning of fossil fuels like coal, oil, gas. Across the country, the growing season is about 2 weeks longer, primarily due to spring arriving later. Now, that may sound like a good thing, and in some ways, it is. There are both positive and negative impacts, but overall, most of the impacts will be negative. This is true partly because we designed and built our infrastructure for the climate we've had, not the climate we're going to have. For example, we've designed our water systems for temperature and precipitation patterns of the past century, and those patterns are now changing. We've built our coastal cities along the existing shoreline, not anticipating sea level to rise by a couple feet this century. Another reason most of the changes will be detrimental is because of the rate of change. If climate changes slowly, there's a better chance that society and natural systems can adapt. But climate change is now changing at an unnaturally fast rate, and the projections are even for a more rapid rate of change if heat-trapping emissions are not curtailed. Let's look at temperature. The world has already seen, on average, about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit of warming during the past 50 years. And we're expecting between 2 and 11.5 degrees of additional warming this century. These temperature increases are expected to be at the lower end of this range if heat-trapping pollutants are substantially reduced. They'll end up near the upper end of the range if emissions continue to grow as they have been. The chart in back of me shows observed and projected increase in global average temperature under 3 different emission scenarios. None of these take into account any policy changes designed to address climate change. The lower one is not a best case. Aggressive reductions in emissions now could put us on a path to less warming than shown here. However, the highest is also not a worst case. In fact, recent emissions have been higher than those assumed in the highest scenario shown here. That means staying the current course could raise global temperatures as much as 11.5 degrees. This could even be higher in the U.S. because U.S. temperatures are projected to warm more than the globe as a whole. And speaking of higher temperatures, one of the ways we'll see temperatures increase will be in the number of very hot days. The maps show the number of days per year over the coming decades when the temperature will exceed 100 degrees. Higher emissions of heat-trapping pollutants result in more temperature rise and many more days above 100 degrees, as shown on the map on the top right. For example, an area in Texas that now sees 10 to 20 days per year over 100 degrees, by the end of this century, under a high emission scenario, will experience more than 100 days over 100 degrees. This kind of extreme heat will have major impacts on the economy, our health, and well-being. Our health will be directly affected by more very hot days and heat waves. Extreme heat waves, which are currently rare, will become much more common in the future. And at the same time, the U.S. population is aging, and older people are more vulnerable to extreme heat. Increases in heat-related illnesses and death are projected in cities across the nation, especially under high emission scenarios. For an example, an analysis of heat waves in Chicago finds about a tenfold increase in heat-related deaths by late this century under a high emission scenario. But there are success stories regarding adaptation to heat waves. For example, Philadelphia has implemented a successful plan for reducing the risk of death during heat waves that has already saved lives. The city of Chicago is working to reduce urban heat by using green roofs and planting trees. Now, in addition to rising temperatures, we've seen significant changes in precipitation as well. One of the most important changes we've seen across the nation is that more rain is coming in the form of heavy downpours. There are fewer light rains and more heavy rains in every region. An important message from the map is that the heaviest storms are even heavier than before. You can see that the largest percent increases in the heaviest downpours have taken place in the Midwest and the Northeast. So it's no surprise that we've seen some record flooding there. And we understand why warming leads to these heavy and extreme precipitation events. Higher temperatures mean more evaporation, putting more water vapor in the air, and then when a storm comes along, all this additional water vapor is dumped in that storm in the form of a heavy downpour. We have observed longer, drier periods between downpours. A warmer world tends to have more dry extremes and wet extremes. This pattern is projected to continue, with higher emissions meaning greater increases in the heaviest downpours. Across North America, the pattern of precipitation will change. The maps show projected changes in precipitation by season for the late century under a continuation of business as usual. Projected increases in precipitation are shown in blue. Decreases are shown in brown. There is good confidence in the general pattern of these changes, with the north getting more precipitation, the south getting less. What we're not so sure about is the precise location of the transition between these two zones. For example, in the southwest, we should expect to see large decreases in precipitation in the spring. Couple that with increased evaporation, more water evaporated from plants or lost from plants, and reduced snowpack and river runoff, we can expect the southwest to see more droughts.
That was a lead author of the report, Global Climate Change Impacts in the United States, Dr. Thomas Carl, director of the National Climatic Data Center at NOAA. It's a long list of serious impacts, wouldn't you say? Much greater, in my opinion, than any terrorist attack. And we're doing it to ourselves with fossil fuels and deforestation. From the heart of San Francisco and going out to all America, this is Green 960 AM, the Radio EcoShock Show. I want to give you some analysis, and who better than Joseph Rahm, previously a top energy advisor in the Clinton administration, now running a DC Insider climate blog. To get the straight goods on new government climate projections for the U.S., we'll go straight to the best climate blogger on the net, Joe Rome of climateprogress.org. Joe, the new report, The Global Climate Change Impacts in the United States, it sounds a lot like your book, Hell and High Water.
Well, there's no question that I think that it is a pretty blunt picture of what happens to the United States if we keep pouring out greenhouse gas emissions and don't do anything about it.
Could you run us through some of the high points of the report as you see it?
Well, one of the key points is that they have updated the sea level rise numbers. People who follow this closely know that the big UN International report in 2007 didn't really look at how the ice is disintegrating from Greenland and Antarctica. So this report said that we could expect, on a high emission scenario, sea level rise of 3 to 4 feet, which is pretty high. I mean, in the United States, that would be devastating to large parts of the country. I mean, the entire Everglades would disappear. The key Florida Keys would be gone. Southern Louisiana would be gone. Many of our, most beaches would just be covered, and it would just be a radically different a coastline for the country.
Well, they mentioned they had to build a new sewage plant in, I think it was in Boston, higher, just to take into account that possibility.
Yeah, well, there's no question that there are a lot of municipal utilities and the like which would have a lot of difficulty. And then you also have to bear in mind saltwater infiltration, so that places that are used to, fresh water are going to see salt water creeping into their system. And, of course, then you have to add on top of that storm surges. Remember, our shorelines have been built up over, decades and decades. They've been toughened up by the waves and storms. But if you raise sea levels 3 feet, then all of a sudden the tides and the storm surges are hitting parts of the land that have never really experienced that kind of intense wave. So it is the end of the coastline as we have come to know it, and the same would be true, obviously, for Canada.
And hearing about Kansas, over 90 degrees, 120 days a year, even hotter in Houston, a lot of cities in America could be very uncomfortable places to live, especially in the South. How do you think people will handle this information?
Well, I think that what people haven't understood, because the way scientists have been talking about this is they usually give a range of temperature impacts. But those range of temperature impacts, some of which are quite low, have always been based on scenarios that assumes the world gets serious and dramatically reduces emissions. And so I think it is very important for people to understand just how hot it is going to get if we keep on our current emissions path. And the answer is that the globe, will warm like 4 or 5 degrees centigrade. And the models say that land masses in the interior, in the northern latitudes, which is to say much of the central United States and most of Canada, is going to warm up 50% faster than that. So we're talking about, in the United States, large segments of the United States will be 10 or 11 degrees Fahrenheit warmer. Parts of Alaska could be 13 degrees Fahrenheit warmer, and I would expect, large parts of Canada will be, just a lot warmer. And I think the other thing for people to realize is it's not like it warms up and all of a sudden Canada becomes Kansas. What happens is it just keeps warming and warming if you don't take action. So it's not like we stabilize all of a sudden at some new friendlier climate, quite the reverse. So I think that, I'm in the United States, we've had 8 years of the Bush administration muzzling climate scientists and refusing to inform the public about what is to come. So, it's not a surprise that a large, great many Americans sort of don't understand that how serious the problem is. And I'm hopeful that as NOAA, the administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Jane Lubchenco, said at the press conference yesterday, that this report will be a game changer in that it will hopefully begin the process of informing the people what the science actually says and not what people who are pushing disinformation say about it.
I didn't hear as much as I expected about agriculture. It's hard to imagine crops adapting to changed rainfall, different seasons, maybe 7 degrees more heat and heat waves. Do you think food production problems could take Americans by surprise in the coming years?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, by the way, the Center for American Progress had a separate phone call today with Jane Lubchenco talking about the agriculture impacts. They are in the report. Sometimes those of us who live on the coasts tend to focus on the coastal impacts. But absolutely, there is this great myth that, you know, more CO2, plants love CO2, therefore more CO2 is great for agriculture. And it is quite clear that global warming is not good for agriculture. Point number one is that who likes more CO2 most? Turns out weeds do. And who likes higher temperatures more? Invasive pests. And I'm sure I don't have to tell Canadians what happens. You know, British Columbia has been ravaged by the pine beetle. And so the United States is getting ravaged by the bark and pine beetles, too. And I think agriculture likes a stable climate. Invasive species, weeds, and pests, they like radically changing climates. And not just more heat, but one thing you also get in our agricultural is much more intense rain events. One of the main points is that intense rain events that see 2 inches in 24 hours or 4 inches in 24 hours, have shot through the roof in the last 50 years. And that's why we see these extreme flooding, which has been brutal to North Dakota and Iowa and the Mississippi River flood zones. And again, pests love flooding, not so much people and crops. And you also are going to see much more extreme droughts. That is already, we're already seeing that in California. You know, countries like Australia that are really at the edge, the environmental edge, they've had an extreme drought in the south for 8 to 10 years. So in the real world, climate change is not good for agriculture. And I would also add, you get around the world, you're going to see less fresh water in places as the inland glaciers melt. You're going to see spread of deserts. We're going to have 3 billion more people. And yes, and I've blogged on climate progress on this many times, but we've already have dwindling food reserves. And the situation is going to get worse if we don't take strong action soon.
Wow, this must be a whirlwind of activity for you now, Joe. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to add as we wrap up?
Well, I just think that taking action on climate is not, you know, cheap and easy, but it's not. It is very straightforward. Clean energy technologies are available. Energy efficiency strategies are available. The cost of action is, you know, we have estimated it like a, you know, a postage stamp a day. It's just it's $100, $120, $130 a year to take very strong action on climate change. The U.S. has been a laggard. I'm hopeful under President Obama that we will become a leader again. You know, needless to say, Canada has suddenly joined the ranks of the environmental laggards.
Oh yeah.
We used to look up north to your example, but now backtracking on global warming like the Americans have done and the tar sands, it's going to take a lot of effort by the rich countries to clean up their act and work with the poor countries. But we have to start now because it is morally unacceptable to destroy this livable climate that civilization developed over in the last 10,000 years and to hand a ruined climate to our children and grandchildren.
Well, that's well said by Joe Rome. He's the author of Hell and High Water. He's also one of the super bloggers on climate at climateprogress.org. Thank you, Joe.
My pleasure.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. Find links for this program in our blog entry for June 18th, 2009. Just click blog on our homepage at www.ecoshock.org.